Canto, 9th chapter, entitled Prahlad Pacifies the Lord with Prayers, text 47. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, first read word by word and the translation, and then chant the verse. Rupe. Rupe ime sarasati tava vera shriste. Rupe ime sarasati tava vera shriste. Visham kuraveva nachanyara rupakasya. Visham kuraveva nachanyara rupakasya. Yukta samaksamudaya travisakam santetvam. Yogena vahim, yogena vahim, mevala rusunanyata syat. By authorized Vedic knowledge, one can see that the forms of the cause and effect in the cosmic manifestation belong to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for the cosmic manifestation is His energy. Both cause and effect are nothing but energies of the Lord. Therefore, O my Lord, just as a wise man by considering cause and effect can see how the fire pervades wood, those engaged in devotional service understand how you are both the cause and effect. Purport by His Divine Grace. As described in previous verses, many so-called students of spiritual understanding follow the 10 different methods known as Monavrata, Shuta Tapo, Dhyana, Swadharma, Vyakya, Raho, Japa, Samhadaya. These may be very attractive, but by following such methods, one cannot actually understand the real cause and effect, and the original cause of everything, Janmadhyasya Yata. The original source of everything is the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself, Sarva Karana Karanam. This original source of everything is Krishna, the Supreme Ruler. Ishwara Paramakrishna Sachit Ananda Vigraha. He has His eternal spiritual form. Indeed, He is the root of everything. Bijamam Sarva Bhutanam. Whatever manifestations exist, their cause is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This cannot be understood by so-called silence or any other hodgepodge method. The supreme cause can be understood only by devotional service, as stated in Bhagavad Gita, Bhaktyamam Abhijanati. Elsewhere in Srimad Bhagavatam 11.14.21, the Supreme Lord says, Bhaktyaham ekaya grahya. One can understand the original cause of all causes, the Supreme Person, only by devotional service, not by show bottle exhibition. Please repeat. By authorized Vedic knowledge, one can see that the forms of cause and effect in the cosmic manifestation, belong to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For the cosmic manifestation is His energy. Both cause and effect are nothing but energies of the Lord. Therefore, O my Lord, just as a wise man, by considering cause and effect, can see how fire pervades wood, those engaged in devotional service understand how you are both the cause and effect. So before I begin, I would like to request my god sisters Krishna, Nandini, and Kamagiri to please come here, because I cannot sit here without them. And it is for your benefit that I am asking them to come, because they are leaving tonight and you will not get their mercy otherwise. And I was sitting here and I was feeling like a cheater. Thank you. I was really uncomfortable about this whole thing. I'm not sure if I can take care of this before I go any further. Both of these women are empowered preachers, Krishna Nandini in Cleveland, since the beginning of Cleveland Yatra, which was what, 1960? Since 1970. And right alongside her was always Kamagiri. But then Kamagiri shifted for about 6 years to Puerto Rico and empowered the Yatra there, and now she's in Columbus and serving the devotees and Srila Prabhupada there. And both of them are manifestations of humble devotional service, practical devotional service. They practice what they preach and they give it freely to all who come in their association. Om Magyanti Mirandasya Ganana Sakalaya Chakshu Militam Jena Tasmi Sri Gurave Namaha. It has a twofold importance in terms of our spiritual observances and practices. So I thought I would speak a little bit about those two things, which is the Haribodhini Akadashi and the disappearance of Srila Gaura Kishore Das Babaji, and I would request them to speak about the verse. And therefore I'll give you the book. Because you have more experience than I do in transcendental topics such as this. I can prove it, but I'll tell you later. So this is a second Ekadashi in Kartik. The first one began Kartik, and now we're ending. This is the final day of Kartik, and we're observing it through this Hari Bodhini Ekadashi. Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur explains that due to material conditioning, our intelligence has become polluted by the dirt in this material world. And we all know there's a lot of dirt in this material world. And therefore, it is very difficult for the conditioned soul to realize the spiritual variegatedness However, by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, the previous and the present acharyas, we have been given some opportunity to clear this dust, to clear this dirt, and have some glimpse and some experience, some spiritual experience, a glimpse at what is spiritual life and meaning, and some actual spiritual experiences. And there are different practices that assist us along the way. The practices themselves are not the actual goals. In other words, simply by perfecting the practice will not necessarily assure you entry into the spiritual world, but they will definitely help you. So one of these practices is observing fasting, and by fasting specifically refers to fasting on Ekadashi and fasting on the holy days such as the Krishna Janmashtami, etc. So there are two Ekadashis in every month, and there is a wonderful book on Ekadashi that is sometimes referred to by the devotees. So some of the information here is taken from this book. In this particular situation, there was began with a narration by Brahmaji to his son Narada, or the Muni. And we have to keep in mind that there are different degrees of practicing Ekadashi, as there are different degrees to practicing many types of spiritual rituals. But we have been given the ultimate degree through the science of bhakti yoga and spiritual service to the Supreme Lord. So, Prabhupada introduced Ekadashi early on in the movement, immediately, actually, but in a very simple form. He encouraged us to follow the simple format of fasting from grains, from rice, beans, etc., pulses, and just taking a little fruit or little vegetables, and to engage in further chanting. Our 16 round minimum was to be observed, but we were encouraged on Ekadashi to increase that minimum. And in those days, the increase meant maybe 18 to 20 to 21 rounds. But gradually, devotees would even try to go further to 32 rounds, to even 48 rounds. But whatever one's capacity, the idea is to increase one's chanting. And this increase of chanting means increased attentiveness and increased hearing. It also does not mean to neglect one's regular duties. As this Krishna consciousness movement is simultaneously a preaching movement, in other words, one of our main activities is to be concerned not only for saving myself, but for those conditioned souls who are aimlessly and ignorantly wandering in the world of illusion, that we should also be concerned about saving them. So he emphasized particularly preaching also on Ekadashi. And he quoted his spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, as saying that he sent his brahmacharis out on Ekadashi to preach. And if by fasting on Ekadashi meant they were too weak to preach, then he said, forget the Ekadashi, eat something and go out and preach. He wasn't telling them not to follow Ekadashi. He was emphasizing the importance of doing both. But if one had to be sacrificed, then sacrifice the Ekadashi for the preaching. That was the importance. But we should not make an artificial attempt to do that. We should just understand the intent of that instruction. So each Ekadashi has a particular emphasis or a particular set of rules and regulations associated with it. So we were not instructed to follow these rules and regulations by Srila Prabhupada. And when I give you the, I'm going to give you a short abbreviated list of the rules and regulations for Harobodhini Ekadashi, and then perhaps you'll understand why he gave us a simple, easy to follow version, because it would be frankly practically impossible to even try to follow these. But still, just as in we understand what is the highest form of devotional service, pure love of God, and how, you know, we should chant offenselessly. But even though we may not be on that high platform, we need to know that it's there and we need to aim for it. So it's useful to know these things. And it also gives us a great appreciation of the simple but effective method that Srila Prabhupada gave to us. So, as narrated by Brahma to Naradaji, he instructed that one should not eat in someone else's house. But we are very fortunate because we're all able to eat in so many houses, or in other words, so many temples. There are our houses, the houses given to us by Srila Prabhupada. Mercy of the yatra. So then it is very good practice to come and spend some time in the temple during Ekadashi. And one should definitely avoid anything cooked by a non-devotee. He further instructed that one should chant the glories of Lord Vishnu, because by chanting the glories of Lord Vishnu, it actually liberates hundreds of previous generations. So if we have some affection for our ancestors, we can offer them our affection through chanting the glories of Lord Vishnu, and they will get benefited. We can also worship the Lord with camphor, with fruits, especially also with aromatic or flowers that are scented, and especially gave you an example of the yellow aguru flower, especially pleasing. He also instructed that one should not absorb in money-making on this day. In other words, we should exchange our lobha, our greed, for charity. And what is that charity? That is through chanting and through preaching. You know that we give in charity, we give the holy name to charity, my dear, just like Lord Chaitanya was sending on Nityananda. Hare Das Thakur, my dear sir, please, whoever you meet, my dear sir, please chant Hare Krishna. This is very great charity to give on this day. That we should offer all kinds of fruits. So not just a banana. I see sometimes people come to the temple, they bring a banana, you know, but all kinds of fruits. And should bathe the Lord with water from a conch shell. It said, by doing any one of the above, each one is 10 million, this is kind of far out, 10 million times more beneficial than bathing in a holy place if it's done on this Ekadashi. And then Lord Hari himself, he assures Narada Muni that he'll give liberation to one who worships Lord Krishna with leaves from the bale tree, are with Tulsi leaves and Tulsi flowers. And he said, if you do that, you'll personally burn to ashes the sins from thousands of births. Then he further encouraged the worship of Tulsi in 9 different ways. And he said, if you worship Tulsi in 9 different ways on this Harimodini Ekadashi, then you will reside in the abode of Lord Hari upon departing. So those 9 ways are just by seeing her, in other words, taking her darshan, just by touching her. But that should be very respectfully. Sometimes I see people come and they even try to pull a leaf, but, you know, touch respectfully. By meditating on her, by narrating the history of Tulsi Devi, by praying to her for her grace, by planting tulsis on this day, by worshiping her, by watering her, and by offering obeisances to her. So these 9 ways, if you worship Tulsi on this day, then you'll reach the abode of Lord Hari. Then he says, if you worship Lord Kesava with Kadamba flowers, are even fresh grass, are leaves from the Sanket tree, then you'll be freed from Yamaraj. So this is also kind of outstanding information. Then he speaks about breaking the Ekadashi. So usually in the morning, the day after Ekadashi, we're told, well, you have to break the Ekadashi between this time and this time, and somebody will come around with a little cup full of puffed rice, and you take one, and Hari Bol, you break your Ekadashi. But for this particular Ekadashi, there's a specific way to break it. And that is, you're supposed to rise early and take your bath. Of course, you're in the city, so it says a running river or a lake, so you can call some sacred rivers into your bathing area and take your bath. And then prepare prasad and offer it to a Brahmin. So you prepare some prasad, you offer to a Brahmin, and then you ask that Brahmin's permission that you can break the fast. Then after you break the fast, you rinse out your mouth and you worship your spiritual master. And it describes how you should worship your spiritual master. You should offer sumptuous food and cloth, gold and cows. But then it says, according to your ability and means. So then the next as part of, you know, breaking this Ekadashi is that you should donate a cow to a Brahmana and then offer some dakshina, some money. So when the fast is completed, you offer a qualified Brahmana a gold or copper pot filled with ghee and ghee wicks. And then along with that, you offer 8 water pots containing some gold and covered with a cloth. And then it says, if affordable. And if you can't afford to donate a cow to the qualified Brahmana along with the gold water pot filled with some gold, etc., or some ghee, then it said you must offer some sweet words. So keeping that in mind, we should, you know, find ways and means to praise the Brahmanas. So since this Ekadashi ends the Chaturmas, it's recommended that whatever was given up, everybody gives some kind of vow, you know, generally for this month, that whatever was given up, That should be collected and given to brahmanas. And one who follows this process, they receive unlimited merits, and they go to the abode of Lord Vasudeva upon death. So that's a complicated formula. But if we simply follow Srila Prabhupada's instructions, and we fast from the grains and pulses, etc., and we increase our chanting, and we don't forget to preach to bring others into chanting, then the same benefits will certainly be there for us by the grace of Srila Prabhupada. So I wanted to to say a few words about Srila Gorakhadas. Babaji is practically impossible, but in consideration of time, I'll say a few words. And probably today, later on, someone will say more than a few words. But he was the crown jewel of the Vaishnavas and all the Avadutas. He spent 30 years wandering in Brajbhumi. This was following his household life. He was born in a family on the bank of the Padma River, and he was married. He had children, in fact, and he was a Vaishya in the Vaishya community. And he was purported to be a grain merchant. So when his wife died, he renounced his home, and he took shelter and initiation from Bhagavat Das Babaji, who was a senior and exalted disciple of Jagannath Das Babaji. And then for 30 years he was wandering in Braj Mandal. He performed Madhukari, which was just asking, whatever would be given by hand, usually some dry roti. And he slept beneath a tree in the most austere forms of renunciation. He had no bhajan kutir ever that is known of. And then somewhere along the way in 1897, prompted by some direction from the Supreme Lord, and he came to Mayapur. And there in Mayapur, he was credited as Bhajanandi. And Srila Bhakti Vinod often used the word Nirpeka to describe him. He was Nirpeka. His renunciation was so extreme. It's just something that, when we say one should not imitate, one should not even, try to emanate, but we should appreciate and take the essence of his renunciation. So this nirpeka means indifference. He was completely indifferent to any type of material comfort or consideration. And he was very astute to anybody who had a slightly devious or cheating mentality. We all know how people come up to us and, I call it the BOD, blessing on demand. Please bless me this, please bless me that, or the MOD, mercy on demand. Give me your mercy, give me your, But it's not such a cheap thing. And he was very, very astute. And he tried to avoid contact with materialistic people in very creative, unique ways. In one case, he had a follower. And the follower and his wife were very humble, sincere people. And they were begging him, at least during the rainy season, to come and stay in their home, in their ashram, and have some shelter there. And he finally said, okay, he would do that, but he wanted to stay in their latrine. In those days, the latrines were not inside the houses, outside. And they were just shocked. Here was the person who was, although he did not initiate them, he was, for all intent and purposes, their spiritual master. they're inviting him into their home or in, you know, some place on their property, he's saying yes, but he only wants to go stay in the latrine, which is, you know, the most nasty, filthy place you can imagine. And they're shocked, and that, you know, how can they do that? And he was insistent, so much so, they had to agree. So, of course, it was very thoroughly cleansed. And then he went in there, and he did not do this to create a spectacle for himself. He did this because he knew people that had materialistic mind would look down upon him. What is this? You know, because people have all kinds of ideas and preconceptions about everyone and everything. So they also have preconceptions about sadhus. What is a sadhu? What is a sadhu supposed to be like? And so the idea of the sadhu being in the bathroom would be so socially unacceptable to a materialistic person. And he didn't want to be in contact with those kind of persons. That only a sincere soul, genuinely seeking any spiritual advice or knowledge, would see through this and would come. And that person he could speak to. On another occasion, on the same place, he had them throw fish bones all around so that it would look like he was eating fish, because, you know, in Bengal there are big fish eaters. So to further like ensure that only those most sincere souls would have his darshan, he made himself in a very incredible situation. And naturally, this is one of those situations none of us should ever even contemplate. But we should respect and understand the intent that one should filter out and disassociate with materialistic people. This doesn't mean we don't give them the mercy in the form of the holy name or a book, but we don't take intimate association with these type of people. In 1898, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta first met his spiritual master. At the time, Gaurakishore, he was wearing a tiger skin hat, and he had a basket which had all kinds of puja paraphernalia and pieces of rope. Today we would probably describe him as being eccentric. Because sometimes he would actually go around, he would go to the crematorium and find pieces of cloth and wear these pieces of cloth, only a cowpin. It was completely indifference to his physical appearance. And even he would, when he came back from Vrindavan, and he came back to Navadvip Dham, he was in the mood of Vrindavan, and he would wander in the forest calling out the names of the gopis and chanting the holy name, and sometimes entering into the river. And sometimes he would be dressed, and sometimes he wouldn't be dressed. In other words, he would, you know, be naked even. Sometimes he just only wore his neck beads, and sometimes even they would be missing. And he would chant on pieces of knotted rope to count his japa. So in this basket there was some rope. He gave 4 or 5 pieces of that rope to Bhakti Siddhanta to chant on, and he gave him a tilak stamp with Hare Krishna written on it. So shortly after that time, Srila Bhakti Vinod told him that you must take initiation from Babaji, and unless and until you do that, do not come back to this home. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta went to Maharaj, and he actually met him on a bridge. I think it was going across the Jalangi. He met him on this bridge, and he made obeisances to him, and he begged, please accept me as your disciple. And Babaji was, indifferent. He had never initiated anyone. He had no intention of taking disciples. So he didn't say no, but he didn't say yes. He said he would have to ask Ranga Mahaprabhu. So sometime later, it didn't say how much time, but he came back. And he was actually in quite anxiety about this. And he again asked him, "Will you accept me as your disciple?" "No, I forgot to ask. I have to ask Ranga Mahaprabhu. I will ask him." And so again he went away. And then again he came back. I think this was the time he met him on the bridge. So he met him on the bridge and he again begged him, "Will you please accept me as your disciple?" And he was not answering immediately. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta said, with all sincerity, it was not a bluff, "If you don't accept me as your disciple, I will throw myself off this bridge," meaning he would drown, "because I cannot live otherwise." So when he heard these deeply sincere words, he accepted him and he gave him the name Varsabhanadi Devi Dechyadaisa. And this was in the year 1900. And at the same time, he gave him that tiger skin hat that he was wearing when they first met. And he gave him also the basket that he was carrying when they first met. And that tiger skin hat and that basket had been given to him by his Gurudev. And his Gurudev had received it from his Gurudev, Jagannath Das Babaji. So it was like maha, maha, maha. So I don't know what's happened to that tiger skin hat and basket, but it was given to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. In 1908, he lost his eyesight, and he was simply chanting with a very deep voice, chanting the names of the gopis. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta offered to take him to Calcutta for treatment because there was, in likelihood, some kind of treatment. But he refused to go to Calcutta. He told him he'd rather die than go to Calcutta. And he was very, very selective in allowing persons to serve him. He did not want to become contaminated by people's desires, because many times people come to serve the sadhus, they really have some ulterior motive. They really have some material desire that they want, that they feel, if I please this holy person, this saintly person, oh, then my desire will be fulfilled. That's an ulterior motive. It's not service. It's not bhakti. And he didn't want to be implicated in this type of situation. In Phulia, where he spent some time in his bhajan, Phulia is also the place where Srila Tamal Krishna Goswami departed from this world. In Phulia, he would again do the madhukari, and he would get some rice in some pot and then cook it. So the rice was there in this pot, and it was sitting, and he was involved, he was absorbed in his bhajan, in his chanting. And a snake, a serpent, a poisonous snake came by, and it came into the pot. And one lady came, and she saw the snake had gone into the pot, but she saw that Babaji was in trance, absorbed, and not aware of what had occurred. And she reckoned that soon he would reach into the pot to eat the rice. So she told him, "Babaji, the snake is in the pot." So he came out of the trance, and somehow the snake left. But he sat very still, and he waited for the lady to leave. He would not eat until she left. And afterwards he commented, "You just see how Maya works. Look how Maya works. Taking the form of compassion, Maya tries to take you away from your bhajan. She wants to hit deeply. So he was very, very careful in his association, who he allowed to associate with him and how he took association. In 1915 was a year after Srila Bhakti Vinod departed in 1914, and Srila Gaura Kishore Das Babaji departed, and it was November 17th in 1915 he departed from this world. And of course we know that his original samadhi became flooded, or he became in danger of being flooded. And there was some kind of tussle, like who was going to like claim this, the body, and you know, they had to move the samadhi, who was going to do it. And Srila Bhakti Vinod at that time, you know, there was a crowd of people, and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta at that time appeared on the scene, and he said, "I am his only initiated disciple, and therefore I have the right to claim this, his transcendental body." He said, "But still, any one of you," because he understood who he was addressing, "any one of you who in the last year, or the last 6 months, or 3 months, or 1 month, or even 3 days, has not had an illicit connection with a woman, then you may also claim this." There was a police commissioner there, because it had become such a dispute, and he was there to see that it was settled peacefully and properly. So he said to Bhaktisiddhanta, how will you know if they're speaking the truth?" And he simply replied, "I will accept their word." And then he waited, and little by little, each and every one of those persons who were there fighting for the right to claim the body of Srila Gaura Kishore just faded into the wild blue yonder, as we say in the West. They disappeared. And then it was Srila Bhakti Siddhanta who established the present samadhi. Well, just one other example of how astute he was about the character of people, and how he could detect a cheater. Just like, you know, many times there are very subtle nuances, and unless one is very, very elevated, one is not really so aware of those nuances. So there was one reciter of the Bhagavatam, and he was quite popular among the local crowd. And Srila Bhakti, Srila Babaji, he would go very often to listen to Srila Bhakti Vinod recite Bhagavatam. He was very fond of hearing Bhagavatam, particularly from Bhakti Vinod, and often they would meet together and have intimate discussions. So knowing that Gaura Kishore Das Babaji appreciated Bhagavat Katha, some of his admirers came and they wanted to bring him to this person, and they were saying, and he chants, "Gaura, Gaura, Gaura." So Babaji Maharaj kind of turned aside, more, you know, mimicking, not "Gaura, Gaura, Gaura." Really what he's saying is, "More, more, more, money, money, money." And then he said, "No one who recites the Srimad Bhagavatam for payment can be trusted. And they cannot chant the Lord's names." So this is, you know, was a subtle understanding. He understood the nature and the character, because he himself was so immaculately pure. And because of his purity, it could shine the light, and the little impurities could be seen by those with the same internal consciousness. So these are just some of the you know, a very condensed discussion on, not a discussion, but just a little narration on Srila Gaura Kishore Das Babaji, who has blessed us by putting us in the line of disciplic succession after Bhaktisiddhanta, his only disciple, who in turn gave us Srila Prabhupada. So we have to be very grateful to the lotus feet of Srila Gaura Kishore Das Babaji on this auspicious occasion of his disappearance, and worship him not by imitation, but by understanding his deep and pure intentions and philosophy, and serving his dearmost servant Srila Prabhupada. Now I'm going to ask Krishnanandini and Kamagiri to please enlighten you on the, from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Jump, you know, take the holy water, take the holy dust. But the real activity is through hearing from the saintly souls or the realized souls. So just like we've all just, many of you in this room also have returned from Brajmandala Parikrama with Radhanath Maharaj, where we went to the most holy places in on the planet. And we were there, and the most wonderful part of being there was hearing from the saintly souls, particularly Radhanath Swami. And so here we are in this holy place of Radha Gopinath Mandir, and two saintly souls have come, so we should try to hear very attentively.
Hey, Malati, the transcendental trickster. She gets us into difficult situations that we somehow have to figure out how to get out of. So we're reading Prahlad Maharaj pacifies the Lord with prayers. And in this canto, we are seeing this verse in the context that Prahlad Maharaj has witnessed the appearance of Lord Nrisimhadev, and all, so many demigods were there, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and so many demigods, and they were all afraid of this fierce form of the Lord because no one had ever seen the Lord's personified anger in that way before. So they put this little five-year-old boy up to pacify the Lord, and he was able to do so because he had such deep love for the Lord. So one of his statements was, by authorized Vedic knowledge, one can see the forms of cause and effect in the cosmic manifestation. And these forms belong to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for the cosmic manifestation is its energy. And that takes us back to at the very beginning of creation, when Lord Brahma, who is called Swayambhuv, he's self-born, you know, he was not born of an ordinary mother and father, and he tried to understand what was actually his cause. Where did he come from? And why did he exist? And he spent many, many celestial thousands and millions of years trying to ascertain his cause. He turned his head so many times that it is said that he developed four heads from this constant turning, trying to understand and figure out where he came from. He even went down to the lotus stem to try to figure out, where did I come from? What caused me and why am I here? And eventually, he was given the instruction, tapa, to perform austerity so that he can begin to understand the cause. So Srila Prabhupada is explaining here that there are many different methods of yoga, the silence. Some yogis go for many, many years in silence. Some meditate. Some sit in all kinds of awkward positions, some do all kinds of austerity. But the only way to understand the Lord is by love. Premanjana Tarita Bhakti Vilochanena. So when your eyes become decorated with the pulp of love, you can understand that Krishna, God, is the cause of all causes. When I first became a devotee, how I became a devotee was my mother was a devotee before I was, and she brought me a Bhagavad Gita, the very first album that Prabhupada put out, and a picture of the Mahavishnu. And I remember looking at that picture for hours saying, is this actually God? You know, does God look like this? And something resonated in my heart that, yes, you know, because we had been raised in the Christian tradition that God was great and God was good, but we had no concept of what God looked like. So Srila Prabhupada brought us what God looks like, how he behaves, what his associates are. So in this way, I could begin gradually by reading Bhagavad Gita to understand the cause of all causes. Ishvara Parama Krishna Sakchidananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karana. Krishna is the cause and he is the effect. Sometimes we see these two things as separate. You know, there's the cause and then there's the result of the cause. But Prahlad Maharaj is one of the 12 Mahajans, one of the great, great authorities in devotional service, is explaining to us that Krishna is both the cause, he is the cause why something happens, and he is the thing that happens. So he's all of that, and all of that is his energy, his Shakti. He's explaining to us that by tuning in to the Lord and understanding that he is the cause of all causes, by beginning to want to desire, Prabhupada says everything is based on desire. To desire to understand this cause of all causes. When I was in Varsana a few days ago, Radhanath Maharaj, we had just come out of the temple, and he said, Krishna Nandini Mataji, did Radharani see you? And I really loved that. I meditated on that all day long. Because most people are always trying to say, I want to see God. But we have to be in a position where we can let God see us. And when he asked me, did Radharani see me, I felt as though I had gotten a blessing from Maharaj that yes, hopefully Srimati Radharani saw me, because this Radha and Krishna is the cause of all causes. They are the root cause of everything. And if we serve them with love and devotion, Bhakti Amam Abhijanati, then we can appreciate that cause of all causes. I just want to share a little story from my history, and then I'm going to turn the mic over to Mother Kamagiri. As I said, when I first came in contact with Srila Prabhupada, it was through the Bhagavad Gita, the very first Krishna album, and this picture of Mahavishnu. And I started chanting three rounds every day, because I was living in Chicago, Illinois. I had been a student at the University of Chicago. And for some reason, I thought that that's what my mother said, chant three rounds every day, which was ended up being a blessing, because I was all alone by myself, and chanting 60 rounds probably would have been a strange, I don't know if I could do it. But I started chanting three rounds every day, and my husband also started chanting three rounds every day. And then a young lady who had come to live with us chanted three rounds every day. And we were just anxiously calling the Lord. And part of our prayer was that somehow or other Srila Prabhupada would accept us as his disciples. And we ended up, there's many, many details between this story, but we ended up going to Dallas, Texas. And it was a Radhastami, September 12, 1972, that I was initiated and the deities of Radha Kala Chandi were installed. And by Srila Prabhupada. Yeah, very special, special mercy. And what the reason why I'm sharing this pastime with you is because Prabhupada has been so merciful to me in my life and to all of us. We sit here because of Srila Prabhupada. We had no idea of a cause of all causes or any person like that except through Srila Prabhupada. And because he is such a pure representative of the Lord, then he could, you know, give us, he could rub our eyes with the salve that only he had of love, and he could make us begin to desire to understand Krishna. So we owe everything that we ever could be, will be, and can even conceive of being to Srila Prabhupada, because it is through him that we can understand that Radha and Krishna is the cause of all causes, and that we can develop a desire to love the Lord with all of our hearts. which is the only way to actually understand the Lord and the only way to actually appreciate Him. Thank you very much.
Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamini Tinamane Namaste Sarasati Deve Gauravani Pacharne Nirvishesha Shanyavari Paska Chande Satarne Vanchika Patrubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pabinevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. I feel very fortunate on this day to be sitting here with my elder god sisters, Malati Prabhu and Krishnanandini Mataji. I was here in 2002 in this very room, and to come back in 2008 and see such magnificent change, I don't even know what to say and how to thank you all for exhibiting your love and appreciation for what Srila Prabhupada has given us. I've heard in the past from my god brothers and god sisters that the way to get Krishna's mercy is to somehow or other serve the Vaishnavas. Now, in the beginning stages of my Krishna consciousness, when I began to practice in the early 70s, I really didn't understand that point. And when I first started coming to the temple, because I first received the Krishna book, and when I read the pastimes of the cowherd boys, I wanted to be a cowherd boy. And when I read about the gopis, I didn't want to really be a gopi because they cried too much. And the cowherd boys appeared to have so much fun, you know, they just played and played and played, and I cried so much in my life, I just wanted to play with Krishna. So I wanted to be a cowherd boy. And when I read the story of when they would go to the forest, and when one cowherd boy stole another boy's lunch bag and they passed it to a third, and they were going on, and one cowherd boy said, I want to get to Krishna first, and then it was like I developed that mood of like, I want to get to Krishna first. And I was saying that every day, I want to get to Krishna first. But I really didn't understand what that meant, because in my attempt to want to get to Krishna first, I wasn't appreciating the devotees. Y'all have to excuse me, it's very hard for me. But I didn't understand at that time the importance of the association of the devotees. And so what happened is, you know, sometimes we don't understand this principle. But as the verse says, Krishna is the cause and the effect. And we have so many unlimited, I know for myself, anarchists within my heart that need to come out, that Krishna created a situation where first, as we were hearing on the yatra, you know, Krishna gave me a hook and he brought me to the temple and he gave me the association of devotees, and everything was so wonderful. And it was actually the enthusiasm of the devotees and how they were serving Srila Prabhupada and the sacrifices that they were making. I was in awe, just complete awe, at watching how they were doing everything. Because in the material world, nobody wants to work. Everybody's very lazy. They want the results, but they don't want to perform the sacrifice. And so when I came in the midst of the association of devotees, I was like, wow, this is like another world. And somehow or other, I pray that I'll be able to stay. So going on in this misguided consciousness that I want to get to Krishna first, Krishna had a plan for me. And so he let me just think that I can get to him first by just giving me so much wonderful service, so much wonderful service, surrounded by the devotees, but still I wasn't appreciating. And eventually, the effect was that he left. Shri Radha Muralidhar, and they left the temple, and they went to New Vrindavan, and they eventually ended up in New York, and I was devastated because I didn't understand why it had to happen. So still, you know, you still have to continue. Srila Prabhupada left. Still, somehow or other, you have to continue. And it's very difficult to do it by yourself. Mother Krishnamurthy, some of you don't know, she has 10 children. 10. But every single day, every day, there's not one person, and I'm a witness to this, not one person that comes before her will not leave her presence without chanting Hare Krishna. And I have always, always been in awe at how she could do that. It's like, I could never do that. So when you hear that Prabhupada said, the devotee said that Srila Prabhupada has built a house in which the whole world could live peacefully, I used to wonder, well, is there a room for me? I didn't know where I would fit. But by the mercy of the Vaishnavas, see, because when Krishna left, he took everything away from me, like absolutely everything. It was so funny. He took away my house. He took away my car. He took all my paraphernalia. He took me so far away from the devotees. And I didn't even have a quarter to even make a phone call. But it was his mercy because he wanted me to understand the importance of the association of devotees. And how you have to never, ever neglect that fact. And it is only by their mercy that even to this day that I am still able to put my hand in my bead bag, to come to the Mangal Aarti, to be in Guru Puja, to do even a tiny bit of service, to somehow or other give something back to my guru. So I found out that my room in Srila Prabhupada's house, and I'm always praying to live in that room eternally, is to somehow or other always, always be of service to the Vaishnavas. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
We read many important instructions in the books, and sometimes we're thinking that's an important instruction, but you know, how am I supposed to do it, or you know, when will I do it? But when you hear directly from a devotee how the effect of neglecting an important instruction and then the effect of assuming that instruction, that's what we call testimony. Testimony to that instruction and the power of that instruction. So if we want to understand the Bhagavatam, if we want to understand Krishna, if we want to understand even devotional service, because just like Krishna Nandini says, she was serving over her head 24 hours a day. And most of us, at one point or another, we get into that endeavor mood, that over-endeavor mood. But if we want to understand Krishna and we want to understand devotional service, then the lesson that is being imparted is here, is how much we must appreciate Krishna's devotees and acknowledge their importance and presence in our lives. And not just, you know, in our mind, but we have to let them know that Prabhu, thank you for being here today and dancing and chanting and serving. And thank you, Prabhu. We actually have to tell the person and let them know. And we have to serve these wonderful devotees. And in that way, Krishna will be very kind upon us, because just like the mother is, you know, if you want to get the attention of the mother or father, you just pat their kid on the head and they melt all over you. They'll do anything for you. So in the same way, when Krishna sees our appreciation of his servants, he is at your beck and call also. And if our desire is to serve him, then by the mercy of Srimati Radharani, we'll be blessed with unlimited service, and we'll perform that unlimited service with unlimitedly good consciousness by the mercy of the Vaishnavas. Well, I hope that all of you had a resoundingly wonderful Kartik Vrat this year, and tonight is the final opportunity to offer our devotion in the form of the flames. So do not miss this final ceremony tonight. During one of the discussions, Maharaj was very eloquently explaining the real purport of the various rituals that we do. You know, rituals can be just meaningless circles with the ghee lamp, or they can be offerings of love, offerings of affection, are offerings of a desire to have that love and affection for the Supreme Lord. So these ghee lamps are reflections of our heart, which are naturally imbued with love of God, locked in there somehow. And by offering these ghee lamps, we have a little opportunity to unlock that love that is within our own heart and offer it back to Lord Damodar. So thank you very much for allowing all of us to be with you here today. And may you always go on serving Srila Prabhupada in his mission. Hare Krishna. And did anybody have any questions? Are there any questions or comments? Maybe you wanted to say some comments?
Maharaj, I just wanted to add a comment that Srila Prabhupada said we will show our love for him by how we cooperate and what with one another. And what Maharaj Devi Dasi did today is exemplary of that fact. To call us up here and to, you know, invite us to share with you as well, it shows that she has so much imbibed love for Prabhupada that she knows that spirit of cooperation. So we should all pray for that. Hari Bol.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Shishi Radha Gopinath ki jai. Damodar Astam ki jai.